Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
I do hope you are dancing your little butt off in your car, in your lounge room, in your kitchen. You should be cooking because, of course, it is the best hour of food and beverage on radio in Melbourne for the queer community. It's Cravings here on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon, and today we have a cracker of a show. My arse has already started to expand with these very beautiful buttery pastries brought in by my first guest, who will actually stay with me for the remainder of the program. She's just opened a, well, fabulous, I think, would be an understatement. Fabulous little venue in Lonsdale Street. She also has, I think, one of the finest French dining rooms in Melbourne.
Oh, shucks.
She will tell us all about it. Her name is Zoe Ladyman. Also later on, I was wondering this morning, I woke up and had this thought. Can we buy wine in Australia? Oh, crikey, without hitting the microphone. That is suitable for investment. Can we make a dollar out of wine that we put away and lie down and all of that? It was a very important question for me because it is the end of the financial year, and my contribution to EFS is to have that discussion with the very gorgeous Dan Sims. That will happen a little later in the show as well. In the meantime, bounce away, and I'll be back with some foodie news in just a second. Here in the foodie news this week, I do have to tell you I have a giveaway, but I can't ask you to text or to email in because, well, the system's down. It's the only thing that's gone down this morning anywhere near me, but the system is down, so there'll be no text, there will be no emails. You can do the old-fashioned thing, pick up the telephone and ring, because I will be giving away a double pass to see I Am Love, the Oscar winner Tilda Swinton. Just odd-looking woman, Tilda Swinton. She stars in Joy 94.9's movie of the week, I Am Love, a visually stunning Italian romance set in Milan at the turn of the century, featuring music by John Adams and wardrobe by Jill Sander and Fendi. If nothing else, this film is going to look fabulous. Milan, Fendi. Time Out New York says, see it by any means necessary, and the Sunday Times calls I Am Love a masterpiece. Oh, I'm tearing up just at the minute. I Am Love is in cinemas from Thursday, June 24, and I will be giving away a double pass for at Cinema Nova, Melbourne's home of quality art house cinema, thanks to Rialto Entertainment. Now, you have to be an existing member who has not won a prize in the last 2 weeks, or be willing indeed to join up over the phone, so you'll be speaking to Adrian on the front desk. We'll give that away a little later, but first of all, some news. The Rathdown Tavern has closed its doors with the restored North Carlton Corner pub looking trashed, suppliers left with outstanding bills, and at least one couple who had paid a substantial deposit for their wedding. They've been left high and dry without warning. Locals report that the licensee took most of the fittings and a sign on the papered-up windows said it was closed for repairs. According to The Age, an agent has been put in charge of releasing the property. It's a beautiful building, corner of Rathdown and Kay Streets.
What a shame.
It's stunning. You could open a nice little French dining room in there.
I could. I'd go in competition with myself, though.
Indeed. She is gone and she's not unhappy. She's been vilified for her constant sooking throughout MasterChef, but Joanne Zahm has now exited the show without so much as a pout, following a nail-biting face-off with Elimination Survivor extraordinaire Jonathan Dudia. And she used her departure to hit back at her detractors. Joanne has been one of the most disliked contestants on the top-rating show and has, via a Facebook group, even received death threats. I was never a fan, and that's been very public. In a decision that is sure to please scores of MasterChef fans like myself, Zahm was told to pack her bags after failing to impress the judging panel, including London-based Australian chef Brett Graham, with a complex pigeon dish. She says, I was horrified when I saw the pigeon. I'm quite squeamish and I don't like to see dead things. The first thing I thought of when I saw the pigeon was, I know they're going to make us break down the bird and I'm going to have to cut its head off.
Oh, she wants to be a chef?
Lady, you want to cook food? Oh. You have to cut the occasional head off a chook. When I was told I was going home, I was actually quite happy. For me, it wasn't depressing. I actually left on a high note in London. I have faced some of my cooking fears on the show and it has given me the confidence to walk away and say that I can do anything. All I can say is good riddance. Never a fan. Exciting news from the venerable Flower Drum, according to The Age, which is about to introduce its most significant menu change in 20 years. It appears the Cantonese stalwart has decided to keep in step with the times and ditch the multi-page a la carte menu for far more streamlined offerings that will change daily to reflect available produce.
Sign of the times.
Fairly significant change, Zoe, I think. The restructure of the menu, says Jason Liu, is a new way of communicating to our customers. People these days like more choice and for things to change quickly with the availability of produce. We're not cutting things down, but we are getting back to basics.
Well, the focus is very much on what's seasonal, I think.
And it should be.
Especially with MasterChef, and I think we know a lot more, and so we're demanding what's in season, and I suppose they're thinking they have to keep up.
Yes, good idea. Neil Perry and partners have put on hold plans for expansion into Los Angeles or London until at least next year. Given the Rockpool Group has three projects under design or construction in two states, it's hardly surprising. The current Bar and Grill Melbourne chef Ben Polly will run the kitchens for Spice Temple when it opens at Crown around October 10, around my birthday, so if you want to invite me, I'd be very happy to be there. Perry is effectively gutting Bistro Guillaume to create a two-level, 180-seater-plus bar. Photographer Earl Carter is again involved with images for the new restaurant's branding. And other key Perry lieutenants, husband and wife Khan Dennis and Catherine Adams, who are currently in Sydney, will be effectively a roaming Sydney-Perth-Melbourne brief later in the year when the basement kitchen opens to service the under-construction Perry-run lobby bar at the Crown Towers. He's also opening, I believe, in Hong Kong, calling the 200-seat bar and grill Perth at Burswood Casino.
Busy I was born man. In Perth.
Sorry?
I was born in Perth.
Were you?
I can't believe Neil Perry's
like
going.
Perth. It's going to be very good for the Perth industry.
I think so.
Now, in what is believed to be an Australian first, speaking of WA, the WA Benedictine community of New Norcia has begun labelling its wine bottles with health warnings. The monastery north of Perth has been producing its own Abbey wine label since 2000 after being approached by the Country Women's Association, of all people. The monastery agreed to the labels which warn pregnant women of the dangers of drinking alcohol to their unborn babies. The community's chief wine producer, Nick Humphrey, says he understands the move might not win everyone's support, but is a responsible way to raise awareness. He says they might not like a wine bottle sitting on the table with that on, but I'm quite comfortable with it.
Will we get to a point where we just have warnings on our labels everywhere?
And then you won't be able to see the label.
And we don't know what the product is?
It'll go back to when the Widow Clicquot started labelling her champagne, because the only identifier was on the bottom of the cork. There was an anchor. There you go, useless trivia. Melbourne chef Morris Esposito will open a second restaurant later this year when he teams with former veteran Stokehouse manager Mariano Massara to open St Peter's. The pair worked together during Mo's Esposito years cooking at the iconic Stokehouse. The Italian-leaning sustainable seafood restaurant takes over the site of the Canary Club in Melbourne CBD, Little Bourke.
Very exciting.
Esposito, who will cook in the city, bought the Carlton Fish Restaurant Toofies 4 years ago and reinvigorated it under his own name. Mo's wife, Hilary McNevin, is a very, very dear friend of mine and a dear friend of this program. She's actually presented this program before while I've been away. So.
I just got in recontact with Hilary. Knew her 12 years ago, back in the dark days of nightclubbing.
She and I worked together 20 years
Perhaps
ago.
We shouldn't talk
no,
about that.
No, we shouldn't. No. I'm feeling old. Movrita's Frank Kimura will be cooking at the Shanghai Expo this month, although in a blow for national pride, it won't be in the Australian pavilion. The Spaniards have snaffled him for their Spain in Shanghai, the new gastronomy fiesta program, which for each week for the 6 months of the expo will team a superstar of contemporary Spanish cooking with an international chef. Kimura has been picked to pair up with Yuseku Correa of Baldoncera to present a menu based around the 1980s cultural flowering from which Movida takes its name. The pair's menu will offer a nod to director Pedro Almodovar with a course called Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, which I believe is a seafood cocktail with a bean gazpacho. And Kimura's famous anchovy with smoked tomato sorbet will be making an appearance. He cooks in Shanghai from 28th of June to July 4th, so if you've got a few shekels hiding in your sock drawer, it might be worth the trip. Pundits are still arguing about whether Apple's iPad is really revolutionary, but its application for restaurant customers will soon be tested when Pearl puts its menu and wine list on the devices. Eyebrows have just raised extraordinarily, Zoe. We'll talk about this in a minute. Pearl owner Chris Lucas clearly keeps up with the latest trends. His forward-thinking wine concept at the Botanical made waves in 2003, and his plans for Pearl to embrace the iPad were made at the start of the year, well in advance of the good press it had received since its release. The plan is for use of the device to make cumbersome interaction with the traditional wine list redundant. Whether it will make cumbersome interaction with the sommelier redundant yeah, is another question. And
might be out of a job.
Dan might be able to answer that question. The Pearl iPads will have editorial sommelier tasting notes. We'd hate to see Paul Bryant, the psalm at Pearl, lose his job, but thankfully we are assured that all waiters and sommeliers can feel safe. This is about for taking the formality out of the process, empowering the diners and making it fun. Now, I've also heard that people are going to use this for menus and be able to send their orders to the kitchen. Can you imagine the chaos?
I can't imagine the chaos.
Make changes.
A big nightmare. Mm,
it'll be insane. And finally,
we won't be doing that at the
moment. No, good. And finally, in two very weird pieces of news, because I always like to finish with something odd, two Florida women are facing charges after police said they threatened workers at a Volusia County fast food restaurant with a taser. The alleged incident took place at the drive-through window at Wendy's in Daytona Beach area. Employees say Melanese Reed and Katrina Bryant used profane and discriminatory language. Witnesses say the women were mad because, now wait for this, they did not get the mustard and mayonnaise packets they requested with their order. Police say Ms. Reed chased one drive-through employee through the kitchen area of the restaurant armed with a stun gun that was turned on and making electronic noises, according to the police report. Holly Hill Police located the women's vehicle in a parking lot of the Charleston Houseway Apartments. The women left in another car but were stopped. During a search of their purses, officers found a pink stun gun. Ms. Reed, one of the two that was holding the stun gun, said she was in fear for her life during the argument with the Wendy's worker. She now faces charges of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Fun. And I saw this morning on PerezHilton.com. Don't ask me why I was on there, but I was. Graphic designer Neil Caldwell has created multicoloured delicious bacon that comes in blue, yellow, green, pink, purple and red and retains its colour even after it is cooked.
All in stripes? Or
no, each individual colours. But I can just see a little pride flag on my breakfast plate with some googies.
Grief.
Unfortunately, there are no plans to distribute the delicious breakfast treat. But Rocco Lusbrook, who is of Bacon Today, says, it was just a kind of joke that's gotten a lot of attention. Neil submitted this to us. We put it in... put his photos on our website. It's gotten a lot of attention and a million page views. It was unique and fun. We'll keep on the case and see if you can get a recipe for this colourful concoction. That, my dear, is the foodie news. Now, Zoe.
Yes, my dear.
You've sat there, you've listened to all of that food nonsense.
Oh, it's interesting.
Any of it inspire you?
Oh, it's... it's always inspiring me to get connected again, because at the moment I'm just underneath a pile of nappies.
Oh, because you've just had your second child.
Yes. So I'm a little bit underneath the pile of nappies. So opening a new business I should be committed, really.
I have with me Zoe Lederman. She is the owner of Libertine in North Melbourne, a beautiful French dining room that sits in a terrace on Victoria Street. And now is also the owner of a new business, and this is what I'd like to talk about in just a second, called Le Traiteur, which means the caterer. And I've got sitting here this beautiful little crusty French croissant.
Baked just for you, freshly this morning.
Yeah, I know. These were being rolled last night just for this very program.
Yeah, I'm going to see Pete, Nick. I need to take him croissant. And he went, well, we're not baking on Saturday, of course, because we're going to be a Monday to Friday gig. It's just the first week, of course. And he's been leaving the house at 3:30 in the morning to get baking at 4:00. And so I said this to him, I need croissant for Pete. And he said, I'm really not sure that I want to go in on Saturday after doing our first week of et cetera.
Yes.
And I said, we'll just roll them on Friday evening. So he, bless him, he did. And we snuck in today just before on the way here and got the big Hobart 20-tray baking oven going and baked them for you, my dear.
He is. I tell you, I can't thank you enough. I've just nibbled on the ends. I don't want to nibble too much. I'll have to wait till we play a track.
You'll get gummy mouth, won't you?
I will get gummy mouth. It's like eating a... I worked formerly for the ABC and I once was doing a bit of an on-air program on digital and I've been eating cashews.
Oh, yeah. That would be gummy mouth. Peanuts, probably. Like peanut butter.
So you could hear it was hilarious. So I always make sure I behave myself on Saturday morning with my diet. I'm usually
just
hungover.
Just for an hour, this hour.
Usually hungover. I always wander in on Saturday going, everybody says, how are you, Pete? And I'm like, oh, bloody hungover. I blame the old Kumi Riesling for that today. So let's talk about this. We opened on Tuesday.
We did open on Tuesday after a couple of delays with odd food permits and the like, but got open.
That bloody bureaucracy.
The hoops, the various shaped hoops that one must jump through to open businesses these days. Anyway, nothing more on that. So 7:00 Tuesday morning we opened. As I said, Nick was in there from 4:00. He bakes solidly from 4:00 till about midday in preparation for the lunch rush. So we're baking all of the baguettes. He's making all of the fillings, all the rillettes, the terrines, the roast duck, etc., that are going inside the
and
baguette.
This is all made daily.
He does this every day. And plus a little bit of breakfast going on in that time that he's doing the baking. So he's in there baking solidly for 8 hours, and then the cabinets are cleaned out by two.
That's extraordinary.
He can't bake enough.
This is no banging a bit of bacon and a scrambled egg on a plate for breakfast either. I've got the menu in front of me and I've been a bit beside myself this morning. A baked Emmental and tarragon brioche.
Yeah, they look beautiful.
A croque-monsieur, traditional ham and cheese sandwich, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Confit eggs with cured ocean trout and fromage frais on sea loaf.
And the sea loaf's all baked there as well.
This means I'm going to have to come into the city on Saturday morning for breakfast, but you're not going to be open.
But I'm not going to be there. Although we are thinking about it. There's a lot of residential that is in planning that side of the city, so we're keeping that one.
Maybe I'll have to get out of my home office during the week and come in and have breakfast. Oeufs en cocotte, which are eggs en cocotte, little baked eggs.
Yep.
With pine
baked terracotta dish. Yeah.
Pine mushrooms and fromage de mer, which I'm assuming is a French cheese.
Like a brie de mer.
Poached eggs on brioche with jamon, silver beet and béarnaise. All of those things I just love. Semolina porridge, pikelet stack with Corvallis apples and creme fraiche.
I know, shut up.
It's just... I'm starving. So, yeah, but this is very much based on... Le traiteur means the caterer. This is based on very much a French way of thinking that you bake twice daily.
Yeah, well, that was when I was... I lived in Bordeaux for a short time, and that was one of the things that struck me. At 4 o'clock, the bakers are still going, and all of the French, after their working day, rushing into their local bakehouses and getting a baguette straight out of the oven to take home for dinner. And I'm thinking, why aren't we doing that? Why aren't we doing that here? And so we decided that we would do the second bake of the baguettes so that we could attract a real take-home crowd in the area, the ones that are really time-poor, so they can rush in, grab their box of coq au vin, their baguette straight out of the oven and a bottle of wine off the shelf, and dinner is taken care of.
It's perfect.
Oh, I hope so.
So it's almost a little one-stop French shop in a city.
Yeah, and we sort of visualised it as being a bit of a libertine pantry as well, because in the 5 years we've been open at Libertine, it's quite common for people to say, I'm throwing a lunch on the weekend, I need a whole tureen, or can we do a bit of takeaway this, or where did you get your wines from, I want to grab hold of some retail. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to use Le Traiteur as the pantry for Libertine, where they can pick up all of these things that they love from Libertine.
Now, a difficult question for you. Are you, how much Australian wine are you selling?
At Libertine, or both?
At Le Traiteur and Libertine?
The demand is there in a slightly exotic restaurant like Libertine to drink French.
Yes.
People that, Francophiles that come in and trying to pretend that they're back in Provence for the summertime.
Like a bottle of Beaujolais.
They want a bottle of rosé or whatever in the summertime. So there is a strong demand for the French wine. I'm really, really big on supporting our own backyard as well, especially especially the really close, the Victorian wines, especially with what they've been through in the last.
Speaking of drinking El Camino Riesling, I popped into somewhere last night and they had, a bit of a blackboard list of four or five wines. And I said, I'm not drinking the Chardonnay because it's from Tasmania. I'm not drinking that muck from across the ditch that they're calling Sauvignon Blanc.
Yes, across the ditch.
I said, I need to drink something Victorian.
Well, you drank El Kumi. That's not Victorian.
No, this was after the El Kumi session. Okay. So I drank a lovely Pinot Gris from the Mornington Peninsula.
Well, there you go. That's a good choice.
It is. And I'm very much
a supporter. Was it
Tegallant? No. But I love Tegallant wines. I know Mr. McCarthy quite well. And I actually have half my office has got Tegallant wines in it at the minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a good boy, Kevin. He's a friend of Libertine too.
He is adorable. So let's talk a bit about Libertine as well, because this is a gorgeous little French dining room and you have... fun events.
We just recently had a really cracking event. That game dinner, is that of what you're speaking?
I'm just sort of the roast game and Pinot Noir battle and the you have your BYO nights every Thursday so people can bring their own wine and enjoy it with the food.
That's a really important culture, that one, because we attract a winey crowd. They're all developing their own cellars as well. So it makes sense for us to say, bring in that one that you've been looking at for 5 years, or even that one that you just bought last weekend and you can't wait. Yes. Bring it in, and we'll cook something to go with it, so you can crack it and have a go.
I'm going to have to come in because I have a French white that I was given that's been sitting on my rack, on my wine rack. Yeah. I haven't been running around with
it. Sorry, I giggled.
Pecs. And I need to come in and have something with that. And I'm thinking maybe it's something fishy. It's quite dry.
Which, what is it? Do you remember?
I'll have to look at the label.
Well, maybe a bit of seafood. We'll organise something. Just talk to Andre. He's a good man.
And Friday, the libertine libation.
Yeah, this is something new that we've introduced. Just because I like to open fun things. And it's nice to, you don't often see a selection of really unusual wines from different pockets, tiny pockets over the world, or age wines, something that's something local or something from abroad that's got 20 years or such on it, or top end wines. You know, for example, last night we did we were doing a Bindi double, and so we opened a couple of Michael Dillon's wines just for fun.
He'd have to be a fabulous man with that name, by the way.
He's a fabulous man, you know, Michael. He's a beautiful man. He makes great wines, and he's so terribly gorgeous as well.
Oh, is he? Like most of your staff, by the way.
You should shush.
Now, if this is just a hint to those gentlemen and ladies out there who want something nice to look at while you're eating your fabulous French food.
Yeah, we do have cute staff.
Yes, very cute staff at Libertine in North Melbourne. Now, I believe we have... Look, this could get technical in a minute. We'll just stand by. We're going to put a call through, I think, from the front desk. I'm waiting for the phone to ring. Zoe Ladyman is here with me. She is from Libertine and Le Traiteur. Oh, hang on. Stand by. Nope, there's nothing there. There's people furiously waving at me in a window. I don't know what's going on. Zoe Ladyman is here with me from Le Traiteur and just hang on there for a second, folks. This is just a minor technical thing. What am I doing? Picking up the phone? Oh, here we go. I need to dial out. Thank you. We've solved it. There's things going down everywhere around here. It's not good.
You're handling it well, though, Pete.
Including these beautiful croissants you brought in. Going down terribly well.
Thank goodness for those.
Yes. Now, you're eating a pain au chocolat.
What do you mean? Eating? E10?
You ate a pain au chocolat.
E10. And I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I'm so proud. Oh, look, there's one being eaten out there as well. Pain au chocolat. She's loving it too.
Good. We like everybody enjoying a pain au chocolat.
I've got the whole studio on them.
Yum. So there's going to be fat bums around here anyway. Now, Zoe is from Le Traiteur, which is in Lonsdale Street. It is a new gorgeous French style...
What do we call it? Deli cafe?
Shop.
Yes.
Where you can go and grab a baguette, a croissant. These are terribly delicious. Oh, hang on. We might have Dan Sims now. Wonders of modern technology. Let's see if he's there.
Pete!
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, there you are, you gorgeous thing.
How are you?
Good, mate. How are you? I'm sitting here with Zoe Ladyman munching on croissant. Couldn't my life be any better?
Maybe a hot chocolate or something.
Maybe a gin and tonic.
Oh, gosh, don't push it. Maybe gin and tonic.
Well, it is happy hour in New Zealand, technically.
Exactly.
Now, Mr. Sims, you and Zoe know one another, of course, and we were just talking before we had a... bit of Michael Jackson, played by Fall Out Boy.
Yeah, I was rocking around the
yard. I bet you were. I can just see you in your hot pants dancing around the bedroom while your wife's out. Friday night, Libertine have this Libertine libation where they open some top-end wines and offer them by the glass for one night only. Have you indulged in one of these occasions?
I haven't yet. I think I should.
You must come down, Dan.
I do. I will. I must.
I must. Just not today because I believe you've got a hangover.
What were you up to last night, Dan?
Sorry?
What were you up to last night?
Oh, I was watching a bit of football.
That'd do it.
And drinking alone?
And no, not at all. And then stayed up to watch a very boring match of Portugal and Brazil.
Who won?
No one did.
Oh,
football won.
No wonder it was boring.
Football was the winner.
I fell asleep on the sofa.
Yeah, it was pretty boring.
Because I was watching the tennis.
Watching Ronaldo, mate. I thought that...
Cristiano. I'm a bit over him now. My future ex-husband will be Lucas Neal. Now, while we're talking about expensive wines, and let's get away from the football because Australia didn't make it. After a cracking match against Serbia.
Have you got croissant on your microphone?
Lovely. Dan, the reason I wanted to talk to you today, I woke up with this bizarre thought this morning that it's the end of the financial year.
Yes.
And apart from being shit scared about that with the tax man...
Yes.
I wanted to talk about wine for investment, and you know, we can buy some good quality Australian wines, and let's just take Grange out of the picture for one second.
We'll try.
There's a bit of Sonnery Claret we could talk about. And then there is French wines. And do you see any value in investing in wine as part of your super package, your portfolio, whatever you call it, people's money that they have when they're old?
You know, I think investing in wine is a hard one. It's like, I think in any sector, it's been hit there as well in terms of, you know, investing and returns on investments, etc. In Australia, even though you don't want to really talk about the sort of the high end like the Grange and things like that, I mean, they really are probably the main ones that obviously you wouldn't buy to invest in. But even that has been sort of fluctuating a little bit. But I mean, you know, investing in wine, you know, I want to invest in my cellar, and I don't necessarily want to sell my cellar.
I want to invest in myself.
Drink my cellar.
Yes.
I want to go to Libertine and crack open a bottle and share it. But
that's right.
But if I had to, you know, I think Langton's is a great place to start if people are interested. They've got a fantastic website, and they have classified a number of wines, and they're exceptional, outstanding, excellent, distinguished, and in those sort of levels. And of course, each one, you know, around different price points. You know, at that really super high end, you're talking about Penfolds and Cullen and Gioconda.
You're talking about the Cullens, Dinah Madeline.
Cullen, I love them. Vanya, I love it.
Pricey gear for you, Pete.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Expensive.
Again, birthday is in October. If anybody would like to start saving to buy me a very expensive bottle of wine. Dan, I guess one of the questions I have, if, you know, let's say Uncle John collects a bit of plonk and thinks he's got quite an established... I'll actually talk about my brother. My brother has quite a good collection of wine. On the rack, he has some Jeff Merrill wine that is from the early 80s before the fire that destroyed most of Jeff's current and museum stock.
Mm.
Does that sort of thing increase in value, and is that something that you can buy to allow it to gather a bit of dust, therefore making you a shekel or five?
Look, I don't think you... some of those wines, if they're from the 80s, my first advice would be drink it.
Drink them. Drink them.
For one. Look, you will make some money. I don't know whether you make a huge amount of money on that. You know, with the Australian wine, I think it's, you know, cellaring it. I think there's so many other factors that go into it. Provenance is a main one, meaning that, you know, you've got to make sure the wine's been cellared in great conditions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you buy wine at auction, you don't know how that wine's been stored.
I think that's a really important point, actually, Dan, that you've made just then, because it's not just about the vintage, not just about the guy
terroir.
That's making it, the terroir, etc. It's all about who's taken care of it since it was purchased
and where it's been. Where it's been. Shed.
It's not, exactly, and you don't want to, if you're buying on the, you know, at auction on the secondary market, got to know where it's been and what they've done to it. If it's been sitting on the docks in the sun or...
Yep.
It'll be ruined. It won't be worth anything.
My philosophy is if it's too good to be true when it comes to wine, it more than likely
is.
And I've seen results of like, wow, some 91 Mount Mary Chardonnay at auction, you know, that was really cheap. It's like, well, why?
There's a reason for that.
Because it had been stored badly and was drinking, you know, not well.
Mm.
If people are looking to you know, super high-end investment, really is, it's, you're talking about Bordeaux and to a point Burgundy and some Champagne. I mean, the Enprimeur campaign at the moment is happening in Bordeaux, which is all the 2009 vintage at the moment, and the prices are crazy. They're up, like, you know, anywhere between, you know, 50% on, say, last year. But, you know, it's those are, you know, they're very expensive to purchase, and yes, you will sort of probably, you will make some money back, but probably best to either selling it through auction houses, either here and Hong Kong. The auction market's gone ballistic.
There was a recent auction that netted the biggest... There was a recent auction in Hong Kong that netted the biggest result for wine in history.
Yeah, it's the Asian market, Asian fine wine market's you know, really going gangbusters. So I mean, buying, you know, Bordeaux's, you know, whether it's 2000, 2005, and, you know, potentially 2009, which is amazing. It's because they're all vintages of the century.
Dan, I want you to think about something else for just a second. I have a niece who is 12. She was born in 1998. Her name is Bethany. So recently at the Good Food and Wine Show, I approached the Bethany people because they had a stand to check out their museum stock. Are you a Tilda Swinton fan, Dan Sims?
Yes.
She's a bit peculiar, though, isn't she?
She's all hooded eyes and that icy stare and nose, isn't she, Tilda Swinton? But she's good. I like to watch her.
I think she's a terrific actor. Not that that's what we're here to talk about, but we do have double passes to give away. I mentioned that I have a little niece whose name is Bethany, and of course Bethany Wines. When I spoke to them at the Good Food and Wine Show, they said they've got some museum stock, and they in fact have a bottle of red that was from the year that she was born. Is that something that would be... I want to give it to her when she's 21. Is that something worth sort of buying for her to drink? Would a recent wine like that age 21 years?
Some of the 98s, this is a very general... I'm not saying that particular wine, but 98 as a vintage in Australia was considered very, an excellent vintage. However, I've seen a few 98s that were very, very ripe, and they're starting to sort of fall down a little bit. But, it very much depends upon the wine and how it's travelling. My best advice would be to buy a number of bottles and, and maybe check them and see how they go.
Not at $160 a bottle, thank you, sir. This is supposed to be a gift for a 20.
Yeah, I know. Buying wine, and selling wine, I'm a big believer that, if you... Cellaring wine is so much about your own personal taste as well, if you want to open and drink it. If you're used to drinking 1 to 2 year old red wines, every day of your life, and then you have a 20 year old wine that's, starting to take on those sort of...
It'll blow a hole in the top of your skull, won't it?
Well, you just may be disappointed. You may just not understand it. I think is the point. Yeah,
you're better to drink your wine too young than too old.
So it's a better way to have our men as well.
Definitely. I think if it's looked after, fine wine from a cellar release from a winery, I think is great because the wine's been looked after, and I think wine's happier when it's grown up where it's made.
True.
When you take wine from overseas and bring it all the way over here, it's that probably sometimes doesn't last as long as it would if it's just been stuck in a little beautiful little cellar in Burgundy.
Exactly, and you don't know whether that has been in a pallet that has sat in a shipping container that has sat in the sun on a dock for a month, which will basically turn it into balsamic vinegar.
Yeah, it's all refrigerated containers, though, of course.
Dan, if people want to obviously you have a fairly broad knowledge and you've been doing this since you were a slip of a boy, as has your business partner, Ben Edwards. But, of course, not everybody is going to have at their fingertips this sort of knowledge. Is there somewhere that Joe Public, my listeners, can go and, do a bit of a course to broaden the knowledge about these things about which we speak?
A wine course?
Yeah.
I think there's a number of wine courses around. When I was starting out, there was only really two or three, but now there's a large selection. As a good introduction, the Wine Spirit Education Trust courses are a great starting point. Sommeliers Australia, we endorse those programs because they give you a good basic understanding and a fundamental approach to it. In Melbourne, they're run by the Prince Wine Store. Up in Sydney, I think they're done at Ryde. They're a good starting point. But if people are getting into wine, I think the best bet is to read and taste.
It really is all about your own personal palate as well. Wine is one of those subjects like food. I can't stand cauliflower and people hit me because they think that's a disgrace.
That's what wine is. It is subjective, but then from our role, we have to look at it from an analytical point of view, and we could still put in I could put 6 96 point wines in front of you, and you're still going to have a preference.
Of course,
it's about understanding what I think that's the most important thing is understanding what you like, and then learning how to communicate that. That's the key to having a good understanding about wine, because everyone's going to have a different idea of what a great wine is,
and everybody's palate is different.
And everyone's at a different stage of their exploration of wines.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well.
I see it as think of it as a never-ending road, an endless road. It's just that some people are a little bit further along the road than others.
And those people should stop drinking slut juice from New Zealand. Is that correct?
Yes, the tsunami is Sauvignon Blanc. You know how much I love New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, I've now got a moratorium. If anybody brings it in my house, I tip it in the sink. You'll be very impressed with my growth here, Mr. Sims.
Are you making friends and influencing people doing that?
No. I insist that if people are coming to my house for dinner, my preference is for them to bring Victorian wine.
Fair enough. Nice.
Or at the risk of not being able to find a Vic Sav Blanc to buy a Sav Blanc from South Australia or WA, where they're being made exceptionally well. Far better than the slop that's coming from across the ditch.
Oh, look, it's funny, isn't it? The New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. Yeah, I kind of look at it from a perspective of like a movie critic bagging Avatar. You know what I mean? It's such a commercial.
Oh, so they should.
Success.
That movie was appalling.
Oh, I had fun in that movie.
Oh, it left me cold.
There you go. It's like, you just enjoy, strap yourself in, enjoy
really
the
did.
Ride.
It left me cold.
You want some arty thing, you know, like Babel or something, that everyone starts killing each other or dying. And so
no, I would like something that makes me think.
Not all the time, surely.
Yeah.
Sure, the time that you just, you know, you just want it down the gullet, surely. Pete.
Look at you. Dan, you should see this look. Pete, you want it down the gullet, don't you? So you would recommend these courses that are done by, is it Westec?
Westec, W-S-E-T.
W-S-E-T. So, write that
they're
down.
Really good. The Prince Wines also has, I'm just using that as an example, a lot of good independent retailers have some good courses, but that's a nice starting point. And the best bit is just to read and taste.
And what about going to, now, I think most suburbs, in one way or another, have nearby, within stumbling distance or driving distance, indeed, a little independent wine store?
Yep.
And they hold their own courses.
I know there's a gorgeous little one around the corner from me in Seddon, which is the Seddon Wine Store, which is run by Jeremy. Terrific bloke.
Yep.
I know that even Yarraville Cellars, which is slightly bigger, there's constant tastings going on. And people shouldn't feel embarrassed about going into an outlet and tasting wine if it's there to taste, should they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if the best way to learn is by tasting and learning how to talk about it. And in Victoria, we are spoiled rotten. We have got so many fantastic wine regions at our doorstep, like literally 40 minutes away. Get out there and go and have a chat to the winemakers and the guys at Cellar Door. They'll give you all the information that they can about their winery.
Go do some pruning.
Yeah, go
make
do some
friends.
Pruning.
Go do some pruning and make some friends, yeah.
And get paid in wine. Now, Dan, the other thing I wanted to speak to you briefly about, of course, is the Sommeliers Australia Scholarship that the entries are now open for working sommeliers. Tell us about this scholarship.
Well, this scholarship started a couple of years ago with Sommeliers Australia, which I sit on the National Committee and also the Education Committee. We wanted to create a scholarship for a lot of young guns, guys and girls, to come up through the ranks and give them a full intense, which started off as a six-week program, it's now completed over 5 days, of learning of very hardcore palate training. We get to try a ridiculous amount of wines during this week. But it's open for 12 students.
Yep.
We'd love them to be a working sommelier and, of course, a professional member of Sommeliers Australia.
Yes.
And at least completed WSET Level 2 because it's pretty intense. Like, to give you an example, we only take in 12 students. It's basically valued at around $3,500,
$5,000. Good Lord.
Because the wines are fantastic, but basically they walk in, they sit down, there's 12 wines in front of them, and we say, you have got 40 minutes, go.
Right.
And they basically have to, we'll say, okay, they're all Chardonnay, now you've got to pick where they're from.
Right. So for a screeching old lush like myself who believes he has quite a developed palate, no joy for me?
Oh, okay. You're working in restaurants, go straight your stuff, work on the front line, Pete. Absolutely.
Are you, Pete?
I'm always on the front line, Ben Sims, you well know that. All right, so people can go to your website, which is
sommeliers.com.au.
Excellent. Mate, thanks for getting out of bed and talking about this today. It's been a very worthwhile discussion.
My pleasure.
Now you can go back and lie on the couch and open yourself a hangover cure.
Bloody Mary, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say something white spirit-based would be the idea. Mate, good to talk to you.
Thanks, Pete. Thanks, Zoe.
Nice to talk, Dan.
Cheers. That's Dan Sims. He is from Sommeliers Australia. He's also a very gorgeous fellow. We love him dearly. Zoe, our time has almost come to a conclusion because we have to play some more Michael Jackson.
Oh, please.
Yeah, now this is going to be a bit of a medley. So this will trip in and out of songs and it'll take us pretty much all the way up to the news. So thank you for your time today.
It's been a pleasure. Thrilled to be here.
Good to have. And I have actually managed to finish that croissant and not get
most of it
mouth.
On the microphone, I believe.
No, there was a bit. There's a couple of crumbs on the floor for the Orange Ribbon program that are coming in next after this. But Zoe Lademan, thank you. Do pop along to Libertine. The web address for Libertine is?
libertinedining.com.au.
And for Le Traiteur?
Le Traiteur, which is TRAITEUR.com.au.
And people, of course, can pop into that outlet in Lonsdale Street.
Lovely.
Been open for just 5 days.
4 days.
4 days.
4 days.
Zoe, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.